It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the family with
Mike Gelfand
and Andy Brant-Bernard.
We got a lot of stuff to cover today. There's no question about it. Yeah, I got to ask you guys a question and all the listeners a question, too, because I look at this presidential election that's coming up and I see that, you know, certain people say things that are inflammatory. You got some people spending our tax money to pay other people's tax bills. Well, how is it legal for you to use our money to buy somebody else's vote? How is that legal?
I guess the Supreme Court made it legal, huh?
Why is that even? So you're using money to buy people's votes, and it's not even your money. You shouldn't even be able to use your own money to buy votes.
Right.
But I don't. What happened to America?
So many things.
So are any of them good?
No, of course not.
Unfortunately, that is the case, I guess. I don't know. We shall see how it is. You know what's so weird is finding people. I mean, do you find anybody that agrees with most of what you think?
I don't even agree with most of what I think. So.
Well, see, that's going to be a problem.
Those intrusive thoughts, you can't agree with those.
No, I just wish they'd go away.
Yeah, there's medication for that, isn't there? I think.
Yeah, but
it's not,
you know,
fun medication.
So many side effects, though, as Andy suggests.
That is the problem. Do you think, and again, it's on both sides, do you think politics have ever been filthier than they are right now?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you go through periods. That is true.
Caesar might have something to say about that.
Well, I suppose that's true. That's going back a few years.
That was quite a while ago as well.
Well, and we don't have duels anymore, although we have kind of metaphorical duels.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, somebody pointed that out to me about a month ago, and they said, well, let's not forget about Raymond Burr. And I said, you mean Aaron Burr?
Raymond Burr.
Well, yes, Perry Mason opened fire.
Yeah, he was great in court. He might have made a good president.
Well, he could have. That's very, very true. Most of our presidents now are former lawyers. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah, they tend to be.
Yeah, a lot, yeah.
No question about that. So what's new in the world? Anything? We got baseball season starting up in, 7 days from today? Is it the 28th or is it 27th? 27th or 28th. I know that's either 6 or 7 days away.
Well, the season already started.
Well, that's right. The season did start because that game, where was it, in Japan or something?
It was
South Korea.
Yeah, South Korea.
South Korea, there you go.
Yeah, yep. I can't figure that one out. It's the American pastime.
Baseball is huge. Well, I know it's huge in Japan. It must be big in South Korea. Is. Otherwise, why would they do that?
Yeah.
I suppose that is true. So what do you think? I purposely avoid watching the games because preseason.
Yeah.
Spring training. The Twins got their ass handed to them. 12-3 again last night. I have not watched one single game yet this year.
No, I haven't either. But I think the Twins, you know, they a lot of people think the Twins, I think even in Las Vegas, the Twins are highly rated. But, I mean, you know, when they lose three pitchers in 1 week,
yeah,
you start to wonder a little.
Why did they let Sonny Gray escape from here? I don't understand that.
I don't think he wanted to come back.
I don't think he did either. Which is unfortunate. He was a hell of a pitcher.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, but you got baseball season starting, which means, although, from what I understand, it's not going to be exactly baseball season after tonight for a few days anyway.
Yeah. It's I'm mostly excited because of March Madness. I've got the madness part, but I can't quite understand March right now because here's the thing. It was, on the first day of winter, it was like spring.
Yes, that's correct.
And now it's the first days of spring and it seems like winter. I don't get that.
Very true. I understand completely.
But I'm totally, as you know, I'm totally into the NCAA basketball tournament.
I think it's
the best tournament there is.
Yep.
Now, it's probably going to get a little, not quite, it's not as charming anymore now that the players are all getting paid.
millions too on top of it.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, and the great thing that I do think is kind of cool is probably the highest paid player is a woman.
Yeah, that's right.
Caitlin Clark, I think she's making about $2 million this year.
Is she really?
I think that's so, amazing. Yeah.
She can play, no doubt about that.
Well, she's a lot of fun, yeah. So I think that's great. And then, but I got other things to worry about, like, you know, March Madness, but then I look at May, and it's going to be May Rideless. So
yeah,
that's.
I thought they changed their mind on that. Now.
No, they're starting to maybe edge towards some kind of a settlement, but I don't know how and when it's going to come. There are bills before the state legislature. And but you know, you've got the Republican bills and the Democrat bills, so mm-hmm. you wonder if they're just going to keep arguing about it or whether they'll come to something. It's not going to be easy because they have to negotiate something, and then the ride shares, they have to approve it. So there's all sorts of things going on. I think one of the problems, you know, is, of course, it starts with the Minneapolis City Council, as every problem does.
Yes, that's true.
And, but, you know, I don't think they understand that Uber and Lyft are, I mean, they are a very important component of the transportation system.
No question about that.
And you hear a lot of people saying, well, you know, people can just take a cab. Look, if I wanted to take a cab, I'd take a cab.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to take a cab for many, many reasons.
You were a cab driver, too.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's, so I know all the worst parts. But it's. I mean, there are not many cabs left anyway. There used to be probably 1,000 of them or something. And now I think there's like, I don't know, 50 or something.
Really? Is that all?
Because you know, Uber pretty much just destroyed the cab business.
Yes,
but
it did.
But the cab business wanted to be destroyed. It kept saying, destroy me. You know, you get into one of those 20-year-old cars, and it's mm-hmm. filthy in there, and it just gets worse. And so Uber and Lyft came along, and they just, you know, they upped the ante, and they're great, and they're not very expensive for what you get.
Those old yellow cabs, what kind of car was that? Those were great
cars. Those
were
the checkers, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
they're called Checker cars.
Yeah,
Checker is the company that made the cars. Yeah, the Checker taxi.
God, it was a great vehicle. Mm-hmm.
Well, remember, of course, you know, you were in New York at one time.
Yeah.
Remember seeing those gleaming yellow cabs coming down the street?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they don't. They're not gleaming anymore. I drove for blue and white. Yeah.
Blue and white. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got blue and white, red and white. You got yellow cab.
Yeah.
My very first cab ride in New York City, I flew in there, going to sign with Don Buchwald and do voiceover, and I flew into town, took a yellow cab from the airport to the place we rented. Well, I was at a hotel that day, actually. So I'm sitting in the back seat, and we're coming in from LaGuardia, go through the Midtown Tunnel, all the rest of it, and I look up, and you know they have the certificate on the dashboard with their picture, shows that they're licensed cab drivers, right? So I look at it, and the guy, it was a Spanish name, Fabriano or something like that was his name. And I just looked at it, and I thought, yeah, I'd engage the guy. I'm in New York City now, so I'm going to try to show him I'm a friendly guy. So how's your day so far today, Fabriano? Long pause. Yeah? Familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity. So don't forget that, Mike.
So then, given the fact that he obviously was a guy who wanted to engage in friendly conversation,
yes.
Did you correct his syntax?
No. I decided he'd probably have a gun on him.
You might breed contempt by doing that.
I just breed contempt, exactly.
Yeah, I see. You don't get that much with the Uber drivers.
No, you don't. You're absolutely
right. I had one Uber driver. I've taken Uber hundreds of times, and one really bad experience was with a guy who never actually looked at the road.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's like about a 10-mile ride in rush hour. He's just looking at his phone the whole time.
Oh, God, I hate that so much anyway.
And every now and then he senses that maybe he's coming into a bit of a traffic jam. He looks up, and then he slams on the brakes. And then he goes back to his phone. But that's pretty rare.
I will tell you, and I think I brought this up in front of Andy the other day, but Mike, I do not understand people in the city walking down the street staring at their phone. Do you want to get robbed? I mean, what are you doing?
I know. It's a death wish.
It is.
And now think about that. You're walking down the street looking at your phone, and there's someone driving down the street looking at their phone.
Yep, that's true.
That's right. That's exactly
right.
In
my neighborhood, I see kids, like 7-year-old kids, riding their bikes and looking at their phone.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, God. Oh.
Horrible idea.
No, it is a terrible idea. So I can't get past all this. We got to cover this story. What the hell's going on with Ohtani and his his buddy or whatever that guy is? He's not his manager. What is the guy?
Well, he's his interpreter. So basically, he's interpreting dollars into what, yen?
$4.5 million.
Is that what it's up to now?
Yeah,
$4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Ohtani's bank.
Yeah, that's the great thing to do. Don't leave a trail.
Yeah, for real. Couldn't
what
be more
is
obvious.
This all, what's it all about? So how did this happen? Because Ohtani is defending the guy, isn't he?
Oh,
what
is
I
he?
Understand.
I didn't know that.
Well, he is a longtime friend. His name is Ipe Mizuhara. Mm. He's a longtime friend of Ohtani and also his interpreter. Mm. And apparently he had a bunch of gambling debts with some bookies in California.
How do you manage to that's the part I don't understand. How do you? I mean, I don't even know how you would find a bookie anymore.
Yeah, for real.
That's true.
Bookie? What is this? The 80s?
It must be. You know, I mean, I remember. I loved gambling when you had bookies. You know, they were usually old guys, been around a long time. Some were criminals. Most of them were fairly friendly guys, and there was no finer hour than about 9 a.m. on Monday morning at the Lincoln Dell on Minnetonka Boulevard.
Oh, God, yes, I loved it.
And you'd see like 12 bookies sitting at a table. And it was always the same thing. Show Morth, how was your weekend? Oh, I got killed. What about you, Sam? It wasn't pretty. How about you, Jimmy? I might have broken even. In other words, he made a fortune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in other words, he made a fortune. That's exactly right. Is it true that most people think Ohtani was involved in the gambling part too?
Hmm. Why would he? I mean,
he's worth $700 million.
Yeah, he hits a baseball with a stick and he makes $10 million. Why gamble?
$70 million a year, Andy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like literally each crack of the bat.
Yeah, oh,
there's another $10 million for you. Here
well,
you go.
And he's actually two players in one.
Yeah.
Because he's the best pitcher out there many times and you know, the best hitter. So, yeah, you would think he'd be riding that high and wouldn't need another dopamine push.
You would, but there's all, I mean, celebrities, they do things like this. They're, you know, drive drunk and they steal. And it's like they have the best lives of anyone on earth, but they keep doing these things because some people are just broken.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, that's one thing, you know, I've certainly learned over the years that I learned that when I was covering baseball. And I'm looking at Rod Carew, you know, and he's got the sweetest swing in baseball. He's a great hitter, and he's got everything going his way, and he's a complete asshole. And I'm thinking foolishly that because I was young, I didn't really get it. I'm thinking, and me of all people, I'm thinking, you know, this guy's got it made. You know, what's he have to be angry about? And the answer, of course, is his childhood.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's always it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess, but is this story going to go any farther? Is Ohtani going to get dragged into this? I mean, what's it looking like?
Yeah, I think this is what makes a great story. As a journalist, you know, these are the stories I always love because these stories take on an energy of their own, and you just have no idea where they're going.
I have no clue. I got to be honest with you. If I just signed a $700 million contract, okay? Mm-hmm. Why would I gamble? Because even if you did win $4.5 million, you go, what?
Yeah.
It's like, who cares?
Yeah, to him, winning $10 million is nothing.
Well, a lot of people gamble because of it's exciting because of the risk involved.
Well, yeah, it's that, what's punctuated equilibrium or whatever? It's not that. That's something else. But there's that study in mice where if you hook a lever up to their brain that stimulates the pleasure center of their brain, and they hit the lever, you know, they do it for a while, but then they get bored of it.
Yeah.
But if the lever only sometimes does it, they'll keep pressing that lever until they starve to death. Because something about not knowing if the next press is going to give you that dopamine rush, it makes you want to do it over and over and over. And that's why you see these old people in casinos just hitting that button
for
10 hours straight.
That's the mice complex.
Yeah, exactly.
God, they do. They sit at those machines and just push it and push it.
Yeah, and they start out just like the mice. They start out like, oh, this is great. You know, where have I been? I mean, this is fantastic. And then, of course, the pleasure is gone, but they're still going through the mice-like motions.
Still, they're chasing that dragon.
Yeah. And then when they finally, like, you know, every now and then, like, they get the, I suppose the best thing is to get the royal flush.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they get the royal flush. And, you know, like they've been feeding quarters in, and now they win, like, you know, $5,000. And their attitude at that point is, that's great, I got to keep playing.
Yeah, just keep playing, right? Because they've already won everything they possibly could win, but they don't stop playing.
No.
Nope. No, they don't.
I don't really
understand. That's the thing about gambling, is you can always feed more into the machine, and you can always potentially get more.
Yeah.
I mean, if the stars align just right, you got that 1 in a trillion chance that, you know, you put the money in, you get more money out. You put that money back in, you get more money out. And they all think that if they do it for long enough, that's what's going to happen to them.
See, that's why I like horse racing so much. I've been betting on horses for like 40 years. And I totally understand that I'm going to lose and lose and lose. And I'm going to win enough to cover the losses. And then I'm going to go back and forth. I understand. I'm not going to get rich. And I'm not going to get poor. And I like it like that. But, you know, I've known horse players who were addicted, but most horse players that I've known, very few are really addicted to gambling. Most of them don't bet on other things, or if they do, they don't bet that much. But it's more of a cerebral thing. But there's nothing cerebral about slot machines.
No, that's very true. That's a good.
And I'm not saying I'm better than them. I'm just saying it's a different thing.
It is a different thing. And you remember Nick Cook, right?
Sure.
Back in the day, and Nick Cook, my good buddy, is no longer with us. He died, unfortunately, many years ago. But he told a great story. But it was interesting about that, because I asked around, and it was true that he actually did hit a royal flush in a casino and won a lot of money, but he would never tell me how much money he won.
Really?
So I was thinking it's probably a pretty solid amount, you think? Yeah, are most people like that? If they did hit the royal flush, would they probably never tell you
how
much they made?
Absolutely. Most people would.
I would think so, because that's part of the joy.
Exactly.
I mean, what fun is it if you can't tell people? Now, when I hit a big pick six, I guarantee you I didn't tell anyone then, because there were people around me.
Well, yes.
I'm not going to say, hey, I'm going to go up there and get a check for $20,000. No.
You tell people once it's in your bank account.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And you don't take the cash with you anyway. You know, you get a check, so that helps a little bit. But yeah, no, it's just a different thing. You know, the guy I know who was, and he would tell you the same thing, who really was an addicted gambler, was my friend Fallmouth Dave.
Sure.
And but he stopped betting. But the best story that I know about Fallmouth Dave is that he was like about 40 years old. And he was up at the machine. You know, the SAM machine is when you punch in your bets.
Yeah.
If you're really savvy, if you've been around a long time, you usually don't deal with tellers. You just have a little ticket that you push in, and then you make your bet, and then it comes back out and tells you how much you have left. So he's betting and suffered a stroke while he was betting at the machine, and so he's up there, and like the right part of his body is frozen. And they call an ambulance, and Dave's friend says, "Hey, Dave, you know, you can just lie down on this chair over here. You know, the ambulance is coming." But Dave, he was in the middle of betting on this race, so he took his left hand and covered his index finger of his right hand, and then pushed down because he had more bets to make.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Folklore says that he went to the hospital, and he was in an ICU, and he really was in intensive care. And folklore has it that, you know, when he was kind of like brought around and he knew exactly what was going on, the first thing he said was, "So did the four win?" It wasn't well, like, there's... you know, am I going to die? No.
Is that text you're sending so important that you missed your turn? Is that text you're sending so important that you ran the red light? Is that text you're sending so important you didn't see the ball coming onto the road or the child that followed? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. When you take your eyes off the road for even 4 seconds, your vehicle travels 100 yards. That's the entire length of a football field. If you absolutely have to text, you need to pull off the road somewhere safe and do it from there. Texting and driving is against the law and can cause serious injury or even death to you and others. Now that is important. We hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Going farther with Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw & Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah, I was never a big guy. I gambled in my life, obviously, but I was never a big time gambler. You know, played card games when I was a teenager. And like I said, I still go to, you know, Mystic Lake or Treasure Island or wherever. Once in a while, I'll play some games. But it's not really attractive to me to gamble. I just never cared for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am absolutely. Well, I mean, for my entire life, every time I've tried to do anything of chance, it ended poorly. So
really?
That helps. You know, it's like
Yeah.
That the negative feedback you get starting from a young age.
But Tom, I did see you make a fair amount of money at the racetrack once.
That's true. I did. Yep. Walked in, made the bet, made a lot of money. But that was because of you.
Yeah, I got lucky in that one. Well, we were standing in front of the Lincoln Dell after lunch. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, oh, God, it's... You know, and you said, what's wrong? And I said, well, there's this horse I like today in the fifth at Canterbury, but I can't get out there. You know, I don't have the car today. And so you said, well, let's go out there. And we went out there. We bet on that one horse. The horse won, and we left.
We left. I'll never forget it. It was a good amount of money, too.
Yeah, that horse paid quite a bit, yeah.
So technically you're undefeated in horse betting.
That's exactly
Not
right.
Not many can say that.
Won every bet I've made.
That's very, very true. I got to get this off my mind, or it's going to be on my mind all day. But Nick Cook, I was talking about him, the guy who had the Royal Flush, went golfing with him at Turnberry in Scotland many, many years ago. And, of course, the Scots cannot pronounce American names. Like, my name is Tom. It's not Tom, it's sure. Tom. Tom, how you doing, Tom? But his name in Scotland, and I will never forget as long as I live, Nick Cook. His name was pronounced Knock Kook. Oh, that's a great shot, Knock.
No one's ever called me that.
Knock Kook?
Yeah. No,
I suppose not. But what the hell? I mean, there's got to be a certain thrill in gambling. I was, like you said, you bet on that horse, and I won a lot of money, and that was thrilling.
Yeah.
But you made the bet, so I didn't. Luckily for me, you made the bet, so I did very well on that bet. But I wasn't enticed into gambling more because I didn't make the bet.
I remember we were in Vegas one year doing the Vegas trip.
Yes,
and there was a guy who had a lot of money, and he said, "Well, what do you, you know," and I, you know, he walked down to the racing cubicle, because it's like you had this huge room where people bet on, you know, anything. And then there's like a room that's about 8x10 for horse players. Because these casinos, they're not getting rich on horse players.
Right.
Anyway, he said, so what now, what are you doing here? And I explained to him, and I said, so, you know, I said, I like the one horse here. And I foolishly explained why he didn't, you know. I always tell people why I like a horse, and they don't, halfway through, I just lose them. Because there is a certain parlance there, and so I said, so I think this horse is going to win, you know, and he's 8-1. I think it's a fair price, and so I went up there, made my bet, and I said, well, so, you know, you're going to make a bet? And he said, I don't think so. It really wouldn't mean very much to me.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm happy because the horse won. You know, I made it like $200 or something, but that wouldn't have done anything for him. So I understand that. What happens with a lot of rich people who bet is that it's mostly at some point they stop, because, or a few of them just bet more and more and more, and then they get into kind of trouble. But most of them at some point stop because they realize without the threat of loss, there's just no excitement for them.
You know, we have a new job, the three of us, and it's not really a gamble at all, but we're going to have to reach out to Jeff Bezos. We're going to have to befriend him and be nice to him, because he did it again. He pulled together three people and gave them each $50 million in cash.
Wow.
Why?
He does it like once every year or two. Once every year or two, he will just get a group of... One was a news anchor on like CNN or something, I remember.
Really?
Last year.
Hmm.
Yeah, he gets like three people, four people together, and gives them each like $50 million in cash.
Sounds an awful lot like money laundering.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, here, I'll just give you a check for $50 million for no reason at all.
Yeah,
nothing in it for me.
So
you think it's kicking back?
It's either a kickback or, yeah, trying to get the paper trail erased. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, people who have that much money don't just give money away because, you know, they're good people.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who who's been in the paper the last week or so for giving away, like, you know, grants, if you would call them, to a bunch of people. And it seemed like she didn't really have anything to gain by that.
Well, that makes sense, because it's not $50 million, though.
It wasn't quite that much. It was more like a couple million apiece, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But she was giving it to people, you know, who were doing...
Oh, it's his ex-wife.
Van Jones, says Darren.
Yeah, Van Jones was the anchor that got the... And he got like $100 million, I think.
Are you kidding? Wow, I wonder why the guy's always so happy.
Now you know, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Well, you were just talking about something else, Mike. What were you just talking about?
I was just talking, I guess it was Mackenzie Scott. Is that her name?
Mackenzie Scott. That's exactly who it was.
So she's having, obviously, a lot of fun giving away Bezos' money.
No, she was married to Bezos, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought so, yeah. So she's giving away the money, and that's pretty good, though. You get a divorce, and you end up with, like, $50 billion. That's not bad.
No, that would probably tide you over. Give away a million here, a million there, and it still isn't real money.
Not when you've got $50 billion, there's no question about it. And he's worth what? No, he's worth over $200 billion, I know that.
That much?
He's worth,
because that would make him the richest guy in the world, maybe.
Yes, he's the richest guy in the world.
So he passed Elon Musk, because Elon Musk was going the other direction.
Yeah, he lost about $50 million on doing something. I don't know what the hell it was, but he lost about $50 million.
Well, it cost him a lot of money to buy Twitter, now X, and he's not making it back. But I don't think he cares. He bought free speech, is the way he looks at it.
I don't really understand why you would want to buy something like that. There must be a lot of money in it, obviously, but you are rolling the dice, man. If people, I used to be on Twitter back in the day, but I wouldn't go on X now.
It's power. It's about power.
No, I suppose
the ultimate power is speech.
Is there a big, who's the biggest one now? Is it Facebook? Is it X? Is it, I mean, is there a big one stands out among the rest, or are they all about the same?
I don't know. Andy?
I'd say at this point they're pretty much the same. As long as they own a monopoly, then they're good to go.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the market can definitely feed more than one.
No, no question about it. You guys know anybody? Because I don't know anybody that's on TikTok. Is that a younger thing?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what I heard it is.
Yeah, that goes right down to like the, you know, alpha generation. But the great thing there, of course, is it's kind of like Taylor Swift. You know, they start out at the age of 8, and then and potentially they just never stop.
I just that's so amazing that the kind of stuff goes on that they can they hop on there and they I don't understand that whole thing at all. I was off social media for what, about 10 years.
Yeah.
What, Andy? But yeah, it was about 10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah. Maybe more.
And maybe it's even 12 years ago now. I think you're probably right. But that was mostly Twitter back in those days. But now I'm on Facebook, and they do a really good job on Facebook because I have yet to read one negative comment about me on my page.
Well, I guess I better get started.
Yeah, you better get started. So I know people must be making negative comments. They just don't print them anymore. Is that how they handle it?
I don't know.
Do you know about that, Andy?
Do I know what?
Why I don't get any negative messages. And I'm not asking you to send me negative messages, folks. But I used to get quite a few back in the days on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I don't get them anymore. So I got to believe that they delete a lot of that stuff.
Well, to a degree, yeah. But I think it's on your page, it's mostly positive. Because, like, why join a fan page if you're just going to be negative?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
No, it's very, very nice. There's no question about that. Is it different now? Is social media, it seems to me, and this is why I'm asking the question, is social media a lot more even keel now than it used to be?
No.
I don't think so.
No?
No, all these people who are getting doxxed and, you know, all this stuff, yeah.
Really? Still, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad. So they get involved in schemes and all that stuff? Is that what happens?
Well, you know, death threats, schemes, we know where you live, that kind of thing.
I have a question. Why would you ever threaten to kill somebody on social media?
It's an anti-social media.
But, I mean, there's no way you're getting away with that, I would think.
Well, you would think they could trace it, but I don't know. I guess if they do it right, it probably can't be traced. Andy knows more about that than I do, though.
What do you think, Andy?
I mean, it's hard to say. There's so much going on when it comes to social media. There's a lot of people out there who are paid to be negative or positive about things, for example.
Really?
Absolutely.
I mean, like, there's a huge percentage that are just, they're just bots.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of bots. No question about that. I don't know. It's been a much more pleasant experience than it used to be. It's very, very nice. So I don't know who set that up or how. Well, I mean, you and Melissa set it up, Andy, so.
Well, Melissa did. I didn't do anything.
Did she do something special just to?
No.
Well, so they just handle a lot better than they used to.
Just a fan
nice
page.
It's nice to see that happening. There's no question about
it. I was going to go on Twitter, but my kid said, nope, you can't do that.
No?
So it was 3-0, so I didn't go on Twitter.
And why don't they want you on Twitter? Because I don't know anything about
it. Because, you know, it's a quagmire of filth and threats and all sorts of stuff.
There's a lot to get mad about.
There's a lot to get mad about.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that only on X or is it at all of them?
Well, I would think it'd be on all of them, but X maybe X especially because now, of course, you look at X and you got Elon Musk who isn't exactly going to take the temperature of the room down.
No.
Well, the format just lends itself to hot takes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can.
Yeah.
It's barely enough to formulate a coherent sentence, much less a complete thought. So the entire platform is basically quips and clapbacks and things like that.
I did enjoy the beginnings of what would have been an interview with Elon Musk. And who's the guy from CNN? I can't remember his name now.
Oh, Don Lemon?
Yeah, Don Lemon. And Don Lemon was, well, Don Lemon was actually, he was treating it like a journalist would. And he was asking him very good questions. But, but you know, you don't ask Elon Musk very good questions. So Elon Musk is saying, I don't have to answer that. You are making me uncomfortable, you know, that kind of thing. And so it just wasn't going to work. And so I guess Don Lemon had had some kind of a contract to do stuff on X, and that was it. That was the end of that.
But wasn't that because he asked for $5 million cash up front?
Yeah, he asked for a whole lot of stuff.
Well, but apparently he was going to get it, but then...
He was?
Yeah, because that's what this interview was all about. It was sort of like an introduction, but...
I see, okay.
But, you know, he treated it like, you know, I guess like I would treat it. I would ask him tough questions, but that was... I think Elon Musk just assumed that he had bought Don Lemon and it was just going to be all softball stuff.
But Don Lemon was terrible on CNN.
Well, he had his moments, but, you know, he had some bad moments, too, obviously.
Incredibly arrogant.
He kind of crashed and burned there at the end.
That's what I heard, yeah. That happens more often now with your news anchors, doesn't it?
Seems to. Don't you love all those little outtakes that weren't supposed to ever be seen and were?
Yep, no question about it. And, Andy, I'll tell you, Mike and I can... Well, Mike will tell you this is true. Minneapolis is the second to Chicago, the best news market in the country. So, I mean, when you've got people like Dave Moore and, you know, Ron and Paul Majors and Don Shelby and Passolt, I mean, they had great anchors in this market.
Yeah.
Why would Minneapolis-St. Paul be, if not the first, definitely the second best news market in the country?
I think it's the competition. It has been.
Yeah, good point.
You know, Channel 4 did dominate, but there were times then when Channel 5 would surpass them, especially with majors. And with so there major, was always that competition. What I have seen in recent years is that a lot of the local stations have really gone soft. It's like, you know, they won't start with, you know, like 10,000 people being killed in Hamas.
Oh, yeah.
They'll start with some, and that's why most of them now start with the weather, because everybody loves the weather.
Yeah, that's true. They start with the weather. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, no question about that. I don't know, man. I like watching the new, because I will tell you, when Catherine and I did move to New York all those years ago, and I tuned in, I mentioned this yesterday, I tuned in the news like, this news is horrendous compared to Minneapolis.
Oh, God, yes. And when I moved to Chicago, and you talked about Chicago, it was like, that was the best show on TV.
It was.
It was just fabulous. Yep. And, of course, the thing they had going for them that we don't is there was news there.
Well, that's true. There's a lot of news still in Chicago.
It's kind of a newsy town.
No doubt about it. But the reason I bring that kind of stuff up is I don't think people do realize how special Minneapolis-St. Paul used to be and still kind of is, but it's getting worse by the day.
Well, the local stations have fed an awful lot of people to the networks.
There's no doubt about that.
And I know my friend, you know who Bridget Bornstein is.
Yeah, sure.
She was, you know, very, very, very prominent reporter on a lot of stations. And but she told me that and I didn't know this, she told me that generally speaking, the reporters on local television don't make much money, not at all what you might think, and that most of them are just there with the hopes that they'll go to a network.
So that's that. So local news people. Well, I do remember Paul Majors, I can say his name because I think it was in the newspaper anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the first news anchor in Minnesota history to make over $1 million a year.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I think you're right. And I think, well, Majors must have been in that range.
Yeah, Paul Majors was, and Ron Majors probably was too. You're probably right.
And Ron.
Paul definitely was.
Paul was, and I think Ron was too. I think Ron made, well, because Ron, I mean, he put KSTP on top. For the first time in a long time, I remember. I was covering entertainment in those days, and I wrote a story which actually shocked the local news people, which said that KSTP's newscast was much better than anyone else's. And it's like people were gasping, what? You betrayed Channel 4? How can you betray WCCO? Yeah. Well, you know, I was just saying what was very clearly true.
When you go to a restaurant, you expect the chef to be an expert. You expect your auto mechanic to be an expert when it comes to fixing your car. You judge them both by the results of their work. Josh Arnold is an expert in investments and planning your financial future. Josh Arnold is my expert, and he should be yours, too. I talk to Josh every week, and he understands the market and the economy, and he knows how to plan for your retirement. Don't put it off another day. The man with your plan is Josh Arnold. Call Josh now for a no-obligation 48-minute evaluation. You've got nothing to lose, and you'll have an expert planning and managing your financial future. Call Josh at 952-925-5608. That's 952-925-5608. Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC Security Investment Advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice. Tom Bernard is a paid endorser.
KSTP does a great job with their news. Not just that I'm working with the company now, but I used to, well, I was their voiceover guy for got four different times over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
So I worked with them a lot, and it was always very, very nice to do that. But no, it's I don't think most Minnesotans understand just how good the news is across the board.
Yeah.
I mean, there a couple of them get political, which I don't really care. Channel 9 gets way too political for me. I like
Channel 9 because they cover more things and more in depth. I don't pay too much attention to whether stuff is political or not because having been a journalist, everything just kind of goes through the rinser in my brain, you know, it comes out with, I'm just talking about the facts, unless it's really, really horribly slanted. But then again, I don't watch Channel 11 News at all, so I don't know much about them.
No, I don't either.
4, 5, and 9 I watch.
I watch 4 and 5. I don't watch 9 either. They're not big fans of mine either.
No,
nine and 11 did not care much for me.
The interesting thing, but the interesting thing is when you watch these newscasts. I mean, the turnover is unbelievable. You see someone on there, and they may be gone the next week, and that goes back to the fact they're just, you know, if they're not getting to the network, there's no reason to be there.
There's no question, and I will say this. I just brought up the fact that a few media people in town, TV news anchors, things like that, were making $1 million, $2 million a year. Not anymore. They're not even close. And that lasted for about 5 years, I think it was.
Yeah, it was always their best revenue source.
Yeah, no question.
But they're still making money because you know it because they're still there and they're expanding their news shows.
Yeah, they are. But I don't think there's one anchor in town, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that makes $1 million a year anymore. No way.
Yeah, probably not.
Did for a while, but not anymore.
If there were any, you'd probably know them.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's absolutely true. But I think it's just the fact that, like I said, it's reporting the news now. I mean, who is the best anchor in town right now? Do you have an opinion? Like, who is the best news anchor, man or woman, in town right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't answer it.
See, in the old days, you'd have jumped right to Don Shelby or, you know, one of the people. There's no question.
How about,
it's not to say they're not good.
You know, no. How about Lisa Meadows? Does she count?
I would guess.
She's the foxy weather woman on Channel 4.
A foxy weather woman.
That's that's what they have on the screen.
But
on the Chiron, foxy weather woman.
Right, exactly. You're getting to a point now where radio's just about ready to wrap up. There's no question about that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I wonder if TV news is going to do the same thing.
I think as long as they're making a buck or two, it's And you know they're important to the stations because also they're a lead-in.
Yeah.
So they do more than just make it's more than just the money they make.
I just hit my brain again that this does happen, talking about certain things, but I will never forget when, what was the news director's name at Channel 4 when they took Mark Rosen off my show? What was his name? Jack something?
Is that, I don't know. Does that go back to Hedberg? Hanberg, Ron Hanberg?
Ron Hanberg. I bet you're right. I bet it was Ron Hanberg.
Yeah.
I'm not certain about this, but I will never forget that apparently the people at that company didn't really understand what a sense of humor is. Because the first thing that Ron Hanberg said, well, let me just tell you something. Now that Mark Rosen has joined WCCO television, he's no longer Little Mark. He's Big Mark.
Well,
you kind of missed the whole point, didn't you there, pal?
Yeah. Yeah.
I will never forget this. Like, you didn't get the joke there? The man's 6'6", for Christ's sake. All right?
Yeah.
So let's start there. Is he the tallest Jew ever born?
Well, you know, there have been, on occasion, tall Jews in the NBA.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think I can't think of one now. Well, yeah, there's one I know of because he's actually Israeli.
Oh, that's right. What's his name?
Ah, God, I can't.
I know exactly who you're talking about, but I can't think of his name.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Eddie Carmel?
Who?
There's a guy nicknamed the Jewish Giant, an Israeli-born American entertainer.
Ah.
Billed by the Guinness Book of World Records as 9 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
What?
So, there you go. Tallest Jew ever born.
I don't imagine he lived very long.
36 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, he died at 36?
Well, I mean, when you're that tall, that's what happens. Yeah. Your heart just kind of stops.
He should have had, like, half of his legs amputated. He might have made it to 70.
He could have.
Yeah.
Would have been a good life as a 6-foot-long torso.
It all works out in the end. That's
oh,
all
yeah.
I know.
But oh, yeah.
Do you think, I mean, because well, now, I brought this up on the morning show this morning, the fact that everybody now has a podcast. So you wonder, I doubt that news, weather, and sports is ever going to be just solely on podcasting because there are just way, way, way too many podcasts out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you had radio stations, you had TV stations, but now, because of digital, you're surrounded by hundreds of thousands of others. I mean, how are they going to deliver the news in the future?
Well, I think it's... They're totally, I think, you know, they're sort of like separate media, of course.
Yeah.
Because, you know, take the network news. It's a fun video show for the most part.
Yeah.
And and they touch on everything, but they don't really go into anything. It's like the longest segment, this is especially true of ABC, and I like the ABC news, but the biggest segment they have is the intro. They spend like 3 minutes on the intro, and they name every story they're going to have, and some probably that never even make it. And then, you know, but podcasts, they touch emotions a little bit more, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That's absolutely right.
And people who listen, they feel like they belong to the podcast because there's not 10 million people listening.
That is true.
That's a very, very good point. So television now, basically, if it weren't for streaming, would people even be watching television anymore?
That's a good question. Certainly not that many. I mean, they still have enough viewers to make money.
Yeah. But, I mean, somebody told me, and I was never a fan, but the soap operas, there's like two left. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
That's accurate?
Well, you know, I always say it, at noon I can watch The Young and the Restless, and then I can switch to CNN or Fox and watch The Old and the Useless.
You've been working that joke for a long time. I want you to know.
Yeah, but I'm honing it. I'm still like, you know, smoothing out the edges.
Mm-hmm. It's your I don't get no respect.
Exactly.
I don't get no respect at all. No question about it.
You know, the other thing about the other big function for me now, I'm 73, so... For me, the biggest function that the network news offers me is kind of a roundup of the various medications that I might take.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if you ever get moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, you're in luck.
Yeah. And what does it mean that when they say mesothelioma or whatever it's called, it's all we do? That I don't. There's something wrong with the diction there.
Mm,
I understand.
How do you do that?
It's a very interesting tagline.
why is it, and I'm asking both of you and our listeners, why do they make up these ridiculous names for these drugs now? I mean, where do these names come from?
The FDA has rules what you can name a drug.
Oh.
And I believe they're secret rules, because I've tried to look it up before, and they'll tell you what your drug can be named. They don't. The drug companies don't name them.
Really?
They start off as like, you know, compound 173XY, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they get approved, I think it's like once they go through phase one trials or something like that, it'll get a name. And I'm pretty sure the FDA gives them the name. And sometimes, sometimes it does make sense. Like you can kind of piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, there's one drug called celecoxib, which is a selective COX-2 inhibitor.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Mm.
But then you get things like acetaminophen. Where does that name come from?
I don't know.
Can't parse it. But there's a method to the madness. We're just not allowed to know what it is. And then, but then, of course, there's like there's the brand name.
Yeah.
And that also, I believe, has to go under certain FDA rules. But the company does choose that. Mm. It's like the name Skyrizi. They chose that.
Skyrizi, yeah.
But it's like, it doesn't really like describe what it does.
No, usually not. Sometimes it does, but more often than not, it
doesn't. So I think the rules must be so strict that they can't, you know, they can't just call it like, you know, psoriasis curer or whatever.
Yeah.
They have to give it some nonsense name that's catchy and memorable, but it still doesn't describe what it does.
The American Jockey Club, I don't know what that is, but they're the ones who say what names you can use and what names you can't use for a horse.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. I had no idea.
The reason they're so strangely named is because there can be no repeats, right? Every horse has to have a unique
name.
At
some point, you can have a repeat. Like if the horse has been dead for long enough. And also if the horse is obscure. Like you could not name your filly Ruffian, for example. The greatest filly who ever ran. You couldn't do that. 100 years later, you couldn't do that. But then if it was a horse that you know no one knows about, you could. But people get away with all sorts of things. You know, and for me, you can't use commas. Which makes for some bad names. Like, for example, there was a horse. The horse ran out at Canterbury, and the horse's name was Come on Stretch.
Really?
Yeah.
You really need a comma there.
Yeah, you do need that comma.
I have a question. Is that a true story? Did you just make that
up? No, that's true.
I thought, honest to God, Come on Stretch, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, did you get paid for that?
No one had to pay me for that. It was so delightful.
Yeah, because, Come on, Tom doesn't sound good at all.
Well, you know, it's
boring.
Just boring. I viewed it as, I was flattered by it. I didn't view it literally. If I had, I would have been outraged, but.
A lot of people still get into that horse racing. I have a friend who's done pretty well in life, and he invested in racehorses. I don't know why. You know, Doug, Andy, you know that Doug's big into racehorses.
Yeah.
But that's got to be a pretty spendy habit, I would
say. Yeah. Very few people make money. And the thing about if people who like lavish horses, like people who are willing to pay $1 million for a yearling, most of those people are just looking for it's kind of like the people who play the slot machines where all they're doing is looking for the royal flush. Mm-hmm. These people are spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and all of it is just to win the Kentucky Derby.
God, isn't that amazing?
And they're willing to, you know, go and, I mean, most of them understand they'll never make any money. Now, what I used to do is I used to claim horses, and we could make money on that. There were a lot of things you had to do right. But that was a way you could invest $5,000 or $10,000 and double your money.
So what do you mean by claiming horses?
Well, a lot of races are what's called claiming races. So in other words, horses might be a $10,000 claiming race, and then so anybody who wants to in a claiming race could buy that horse. So if it's a $10,000 claimer, you put in your slip before the race starts. And then if you're the only one, you get the, as soon as the race is over, you get that horse, you bring it to your barn. A lot of times, like I claimed a horse at Keeneland, which is a great racetrack, for a measly $15,000. There were like eight other people who put in a slip, and we were lucky because we won that one, and the horse wound up doing pretty well. But sometimes you claim a horse and it like dies in the race, and it's yours to bury.
Oh God! So you got to lose money out of the box.
Yeah, it happens.
I suppose that is probably true. All right, you got about a minute or two go. Any closing subject you want to get to that we haven't gotten to?
Someone in the chat wants to know what Doug's up to.
Doug Sprinthal?
Yes.
We can tell you that in about another, let me look at it, about 10 days out.
Ah. There you go, 10 days.
So he's got something good going?
Yeah, I knew something happened, but I didn't know if I should have said anything. And I also don't know what it is, so don't bother asking me.
I do know what it is, but I can't say until like around the beginning of April.
No, that's so good news.
10 days. Yeah, Doug's one of the great. I was just talking to somebody about that last night. I will still never understand why the hell they ever let a guy like Doug go. It makes no sense to me at all. But some people are just like that. It's like, we're going to do this my way. Mm-hmm. I'm in charge now, so we're going to change everything.
You know, it's that whole thing where, you know, you're born to the manor, and it doesn't take long before you think that you've got a lot of money because you were so smart.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I look at it. You're absolutely right. But yeah, we'll let you know. As a matter of fact, I told Doug as soon as he starts working again, he's got to start coming back on this show because people do miss him a lot.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dougie's very good on the show. There's no doubt about that. So we'll try to get that worked out if we possibly can. And Galfano, we'll talk to you next week.
I will look forward to it.
All right, Andy, anything else?
No, I think that'll do it.
All right, we'll talk to you later.